I think I've exceeded my abilities to manage different technologies this morning. I'm trying to keep track of too many things. They're all making noises and trying to respond. K-Pos to whatever. So, well, good morning. As you know, if you've been around, we're working through the book of James. And one of the things that we and Nathan and I kind of talk through is occasionally we might just want to take a little break. Something comes up, something in church life, something timely could occur around Easter, could occur because of a question that comes up, something that's current in culture, but we won't be afraid to take a little break out of the book of James and address that. And I know it's probably not that big a deal for most of you. Maybe it is bigger than I might imagine, but for me, a big thing that we've been going through as a movement, as a region, as a church, is this leadership transition. And one of the things that came up in that discussion here locally was, okay, so we kept talking about this as an issue of authority, and biblical conviction on authority, and both Nathan and I kind of tuned into that and go, well, I wonder if we understand that. I wonder if we understand the centrality of that. There's all kinds of opinions, good authority, bad authority. You can find all kinds of anecdotes for all kinds of things. But do we really understand the centrality of what it means to walk in a biblical authority? If you were here for the preparation time this morning, we walked through the Psalm 119, read the whole verse, taking turns, reading it out loud, and boy, if that's not a call to understand the authority of the Scripture and the centrality of God's ways and this right understanding, I don't know what would be. And so often we can, because of what gets pressed on us, we can have a wrong understanding. And we've talked about this before, but I want to lay it out one more time, that this is one of the mega themes of the Scripture. This is one of, if you don't get this, you probably don't even really get the person of God and his nature and character. If you don't understand the centrality. Now, when we say authority, it's like saying the word submit. Automatically, there's negative connotations. Well, in God's economy, in God's character, there's absolutely nothing negative about who he is and how he is and what he's asked us to be. Now, we live it out imperfectly. But before we jump into that, Dan sent out another video. I don't know how many of you remember the video on the Psalm 23, the green pastures and the context of this Ray Vanderland. Evidently, he's got a lot of them out. And Dan sent another one out. We're just going to look at a little section where I'll tee up this video, and then I need to manage one more piece of technology and switch the... switch so they can control it from back there for a moment. But basically looking at this Sea of Galilee and Capernaum, where most of the disciples were from, many of them were from that region on the east side of the Sea of Galilee, this big sea. And things happened on that sea. Waves were quieted, water was walked on, fish were caught, and the sea is its own player there. But he's doing some on-site. This is the way he teaches. He takes a group of, looks like tourists or a Holy Land tour, and he walks them around. And he explains the Scriptures while you're looking at different things. And he's pretty, I think he's a good teacher. My only caution would be he sometimes speculates with reasonable assumptions. They're not crazy, but they're reasonable. It could very well be. Be careful that we don't ever take those speculations and make them the law. They're interesting to think about, and they're just as likely as anything else. But let's be careful not to take those as the law, whether I do it or anyone does it. Speculations are help us fill in some of the blanks as the story of God is told. Okay, so he's talking about one of the events where they're leaving Capernaum and they're going to go across the sea. And he's telling this story. That's where we pick up what's going on here, okay? Does that make sense? Just so you kind of step into it. He sets it up much better than I am, but it's in about the middle of the video is where these go. And I'm okay, here we go. The tee up to watch the rest of the video. One thing I forgot to mention setting that up is that across the lake was the Decapolis. It was the center of all the idolatry, and it was a very, very dark place. I'm sorry, I forgot to tee up what he was saying over there. He does a really good job of explaining why that would have been a scary, alarming thing to go across there. So there's a couple ideas there that are very central to this idea. Why is authority a big deal? Okay. The way God has arranged the world, he is painting a picture. Who he is, what he's like, what he's doing, and what his kingdom is like. Is he in charge? Has he bound up in this kingdom age? Has he bound up the strong man enough that we can walk in this life, accomplishing his purpose, taking back that which the strong man has controlled, for his own possession, to cooperate with the redemption of all things? Are we free to do that? Is that bound up enough? And what does it shape? Okay? So when we think about the two great, what I believe are the two great mega themes of the Bible, there is a fight and a story and an explanation and an appeal for God's right to be authoritative God. There is also a story and a narrative and a fight and an appeal for God to walk in his right to be a beautiful, adored, delighted in God. An affection for him. To see him rightly. So we see his strength and his beauty. Now, in that, there's just metaphor all over this. And I hope you don't, if you think I am going to overstate with hyperbole today, read Psalm 119 again. You don't think that the authority of God and what he's told us is really central, read that again carefully. Because if we don't keep those two mega stories in line, now obviously there's a mission in the sense of that in the redemption, but this is the foundation of all things. This is the first and greatest commandment. It's to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. With everything we are to orient and see him as God. He wants to be God. And he wants us to walk rightly in that. And if we forget authority or his pattern and the necessity for authority. Okay, let me make sure I didn't forget a slide here. It's not up there? I'm sorry. Well, let me see. What happened to it? I must have changed my display here. I'll extend it. Should be there. Is it up there? Yeah. Okay. So that's the story of affection and all right, I think I need to close one more window here. Bring this one up. Talk amongst yourselves. Oh, I need to go up there and close that, don't I? There we go. So if anybody wants to hold a class on how to embed videos and that actually play from PowerPoint, that would be awesome. All right. There's the two great stories, authority and affection. If we only pursue one or the other, we end up in places that we don't want to be. All right. When we think about authority, current trends, that you must understand this if you're going to successfully take the strong man's stuff. The king of this world rejects God's authority. He rejects all pictures of God's authority. He hates anything that points a picture to God. And he will destroy it in any way and every way. At every opportunity, he will seek to tear down that which God has said is good. If you don't understand that, you're going to be naive in this world. You must understand it. The one who rules in this age and rules our culture and the flesh hates authority because they hate God. He likes being in authority, right? He's not opposed to authority as a concept, as long as he has it. Which is often what you'll find out with humans that want to deconstruct human institutions of authority. They just think the wrong person has the authority. They're not opposed to it, because everyone who starts off with this idea that we're going to all be the same ends up with some pigs are more equal than others, right? It always happens. It's never not happened. There is a hierarchy, but in our culture, there's even more going on with hierarchy equals oppression. And in many cases, that's true. It's absolutely true. So authority, for authority's sake, being a czar, being a fascist is not God's intention, but the way he designed authority is glorious and it points to him. He who has the gold makes the rules is not God's idea of authority. And it will lead to all kinds of bad distinctions. Okay? The goal of this kingdom is to resist God's agenda, disrupt God's plan, and reject his authority. You have to kind of settle into that. So you can even just filter through things that flow out of your flesh and into your heart from culture. We don't need a certain political system or conversation going on. This stuff will flow in from every culture because there are forces at work around us that are opposed to the things of God. Our flesh wants to do this. A flesh's agenda is to resist God, disrupt his plan, and reject his authority. We want to be God. So there's a lot going against this whole goal. All right? Now, if we're going to understand how this works together, there are two major ideas that are very significant to the person of God, but also in when he creates his picture in human institutions. In the relationship one, absolutely equal in value, in worth, in glory. Absolutely. It's what the gospel has restored. Every single human being who calls on the name of Jesus, regardless of birthright, we're talking about that with the wealthy and the rich and out of James. There is no distinction. And yet, there are roles given in all of these human institutions that are from God for his image to be born. It's not about who's in control. It's not about who has the gold. In God's plan is everybody's got a role to play in displaying my image to the world because I want to take more of the strong man's stuff. I want you to cooperate with me in walking in these so that my image is revealed and my glory is proclaimed. And when we separate it out and make it a political thing, a socioeconomic thing, we don't understand. No, regardless of the potential outcomes or even personal harm for me, if I'm going to walk in under the authority that God has put on me, my ability to speak the image of God is my ability to walk in my proper roles. So that's kind of a big deal. All right. Obviously, God's standard for authority and leadership and is very different than the world's, but Jesus taught us a very clear picture. Jesus called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. It is not this way among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Now, this is an attitude. This is a posture. This is a God's view in mind kind of call. He did grant his apostles authority. They were in charge of things. They were to speak that which is true. They were to call out sin. They were leaders. But their posture was to say, I'm serving God's agenda, and I'm serving the flourishing of the people of God. I'm laying down my life for the sheep. The whole imagery that God created in this agrarian world is all pointed at this right responsibility. And God creates lots and lots of pictures of this. Okay? He creates this all over and over and over again because it's a picture of in the case of the Godhead, three persons, all in equal beauty and power and glory and standing, all in different roles, so that the whole lives out the agenda of the whole. That's our job. Wherever we find ourselves, in whatever community, whatever relationships we're in, that's our job, is to, in mindful of God's identity, I don't put myself under because I am inherently less than. I put myself under because I'm mindful of the image of God that's being painted in those roles. That's what motivates me. Okay? So there's two, it's over and over again, and we'll get to some of those. Responsible for is the one who's granted authority. It's not to take, it's not to have the best cars, it's not to live in the palace, it's not to make the rules. That's not it. It's as protector, as provider, is to delight in and care about and give direction and have an affection for, and that servant's heart. That's the responsibility of leadership. Now, I understand this does not happen well very often, but that's God's standard. That's the authority of God. Are there standards? Absolutely. But this is his posture. Because he loves, he leads. And he leads with care and understanding. The responders to trust or in trust, they follow, they cooperate. There's a gratitude for the provision. There's an affection and a loyalty depending on the relationship. Obviously, some of these are more intimate relationships than others. But those would be the common response too. So as the church, what are we? Are we responsible for or responding to as we gather together? Which role are we in? We are responding to the headship of Christ, right? So that's when we pray, when we worship, when we seek him, when we align ourselves under him. We are entrusting ourselves. We're pledging to follow him. We're cooperating with his Spirit. We're not resisting. We don't have our own agenda. We're expressing gratitude. We're expressing our affection. We are responders. And most of us, at one point or another, in one role or another, we're in both of these roles, depending on where it is. Most human beings spend at least a little bit of time in both of these roles. And so in all of them, the goal is not, oh, finally I get to be responding to, I can take a break. By the way, it is not a glorious thing to try to lead people. I suppose if you're a tyrant, you just took, I still, my conscience, I wouldn't let me do it. I could never be one of those awful despots that just take what they want. Jesus' heart is broken trying to lead his church. And if you lead well as a servant, your heart will be broken for the people you're trying to care for and protect. And it will take every ounce of your strength to do it well. And here's the glorious thing. No matter what role we're in, when we bring faith to it, when we're mindful of what God is doing, we get maximum reward and he gets maximum glory. So if I'm in a role where I have to respond to, I can get no more glory for God and I can get no more reward for me by stepping out of that. I can't change what his agenda is. And so I can rest in it. When I get called to be a responder, I can just rest in it. I can glory in the future. Okay, so here's the most significant ones that are very clear in Scripture. God's instituted authorities, government of the church, this economic relationship, jobs, business owners, slaves is a common one, but there's also lots about stewardship and hired hands. So there's this economic work. You know, you work, you get paid. A lot of that was oftentimes in the biblical picture, you would come into the household either as an indentured servant, a bond servant, slaves or whatever. So the economic units were often land-based or farm-based. So sometimes you don't get the same idea of somebody commuting to Tel Aviv to work in an office. But it's the same idea. It's the same posture. In marriage, that relationship is there. And then family, children, and how children are called to be the responders too. And parents are called to be the responsible for. Okay? Does that make sense? So when we look at this, what are you going to do with that? Because there's a really good chance in one of those areas, or all of those areas, you have decided how important that authority is in your life, based on, at least in part, not seeing as clearly how important God's view of those authorities is and what their purpose is. Now, all human authority is going to be imperfect. I work really hard to find God's will. And in faith, I can make a really bad decision, thinking I'm in God's will. It happens. It's not a pledge of perfection. It's a pledge of response and attitude to that desire to keep in mind God's agenda. Okay? So denying God's authority, what are your options? When you think about, okay, so in the church, there's authority. In the government, there's authority. In your work situations, even if you're a business owner, there's a right posture. You're working for someone, right? I mean, somebody's paying you, I'm assuming. Even if you own the company, you still get paid. So here's your options. To be righteous. You can get your freedom, or you can live rightly under the authority. You can posture yourself correctly. All right? Here's the get your freedom thing. 1 Corinthians 7. Do you think God has... Hang on a second. I thought I had one more area, one more verse. Yeah, let's build a list real quick. I must have cut the slide. Let's build a list of things that God chooses for us. That his authority is over. Like date, age, yep. Where the location, the time, what else? Family of origin. Your gender. What else? Yeah, who you fundamentally are, your race, athleticism, your frame, intelligence, core raw intelligence. Obviously, we can tweak that a little bit, but we have limits, right? You have certain height limits, certain brain power limits, certain endurance limits, all of those things. Did you have anything to do with choosing them? Okay? So there's a lot of the sovereignty of God that walks around inside of you. Does that make sense? Those are choices. And when we look in the mirror and go, I don't like that, it doesn't have to do with, like, you need to brush your teeth or cut your hair different or something. If you're saying who you are displeases you, you're not in agreement with the sovereignty of God. Who God made you to be, because He likes you. He likes the way He made you. So we can be, even at that level, we can begin to deny the authority of God. Is there any cultural wars going on about God's sovereignty to choose those things for you? Well, where's that coming from? Because you don't want God to have any authority. You can't tell me anything. I can self-decide if I'm a 7-foot-tall Asian woman. And I get to decide that. No, I'm actually not. So it's not about respect for a person. It's about honoring God's right to be sovereign in those choices. And then there's all kinds of ways to love and care for a culture that's confused. But we cannot kick out God's right to be sovereign and have those choices and have His authority. We cannot. He designed things a certain way. Now, when we think about it, in our culture, we want everything very quick, obviously. How fast can I get in and out to get my food, to get my whatever? How do I meet my needs and move on? There's this call, and I don't know how many of you who have read this verse and really considered the things that you try to change. And it's part of a longer passage, and what I've got up there, I cut out a part of a little verse, not because there's anything significant there, just because it was more of an explanation. And I was going to cut some more, and I thought, I just want to leave it all. So if you want to follow along, 1 Corinthians 7, can you guys read it up there? Is it too small? Okay. Only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and to which God has called him. Is that a command? So is God authoritative? Should this be our first response to which of those questions and which other questions? What question do we ask? How can I change my circumstances? How can I pursue that which is important to me? And we can throw out completely this idea that God has placed us. The other thing that, at least in my theology, I think where I was saved into was a part of God's sovereign choice. Where he caused me, how he responded and planned for me to be trained up and first meet him, I think that was all part of his choice. So, what do you think of that verse? Lead the life that God, the Lord has assigned to you and which God has called him. This is my rule in all the churches. Was anyone at the time of his call already circumcised? And then he goes on this kind of, the way Paul does, he argues for that. Look, circumcision doesn't count for anything. Uncircumcision doesn't matter. Live the life you were called to. Don't go around trying to change things. Because God has established all those choices that you didn't have anything to do with, and places and times and relationships for a purpose. And when we open up our eyes to that and go, okay, God, I want to be mindful of your image, your name, your renown, your glory. And I don't want to be shifting things around too quickly because I don't want to miss you getting, you set it all up. I don't want to mess with it. For he who is called in the Lord is, skipped one. Each one should remain in the condition in which he was called. Were you a bondservant when called, which is basically a slave? Do not be concerned about it. But if you can get in your freedom, yeah, go ahead. Don't fret if you're in a hard situation. Now, if you can change it, great. Rightly. But live in light of God's sovereignty, of his authority. For he who has called on the Lord as a bondservant is a freedman of the Lord. I don't see you as a slave. I don't see you as oppressed. I don't see you as one that has no power. You are mine. I took you from the strong man, and you are mine. Now, I may leave you in that weakened position to fulfill this, but that's not who you are anymore. So stop trying to change that which I'm trying to form. It's how you live in those roles as responders that speaks of a different king. That speaks of a different kingdom. And it has always been so in the age of the kingdom of Jesus Christ. You were bought with a price. Do not become bond servants of men. Look, I own you. You're mine now. I got you back. Don't let somebody else mess with you and make you think you're somehow less. Don't let them do it. You are mine. We are in relationship. We are one. You have high standing. I delight in you. I got you. No matter what I ask you to do, I got you. Will you trust? Will you let me be responsible for? And will you respond to? Will you do that? So brothers, in whatever condition each was called, there let him remain with God. And this is, again, it's not like a command in the sense of absolute declarative. It's like a principle. It's a concept. It's, look, don't go run around trying to change everything. You're not defined by it. Stop operating in the world's kingdom. Stop it. Trust. Now, if you can put yourself easily in a better situation, great. But I'm pretty sure he's telling him, don't run away from being a slave. Didn't he send a slave back to his master? We go, oh, that's just unjust. No. It's completely. God's got him. He's earning for himself an eternal weight of glory by walking in that responsive, opportunity and waiting and trusting and declaring, I have a different king. I don't care about your stupid rules. I have a different king. And I will rest in my weak position. Because frankly, we're all weak. There's no safe place. There's no... You can't create a way to save enough wealth or opportunity or buy enough arms. You can't do it. We're all weak. God just sets up some people to be more obviously in that place, and then he gives them more glory for it. He gives them more reward for it. Okay? So the idea of you can get your freedom is certainly there. Here's just a couple things. As responders to our response to God's established authority, we have some righteous responses and we have some unrighteous responses. We can get our freedom honorably. We can pursue change in an honorable way. That would be under counsel, under law, under whatever. I'm not saying you shouldn't run if somebody's killing Christians. I'm just saying you could build a case to just sit there and take the bullet and go, this is where God wanted me. And I don't think he's going to go, you idiot, why'd you do that? Well, because I stayed where I trusted you. I trusted you to do this. Submit ourselves for the Lord's sake. So we don't submit because we're inferior. Or we can't think, or we're not good enough. We submit for the Lord's sake. Because the image of God is at stake. The nature of God is at stake. The proclamation of the very nature of God is at stake in how we submit ourselves. And if we do want to push back, we use appeals and humility for the sake of the reputation of Christ. We don't shake up the authority structure in order to get our way. We use those tools that God has granted to us. Prayer, appeals, and humility. And we can do that, and we can stay completely righteous as responders. Now, we can also try to stay in that established authority in unrighteous ways. We can seek our own interests. We can just walk around as consumers, trying to pick out, well, I want that, I want that, I want that, I want to change that, I need this, I need that, rather than trusting the Lord to provide that in some global sovereign way. We can willfully neglect our responsibilities to be responding, to be following. We can resist or reserve the right to make up our own mind. We can practice independence, even though we're supposed to be in this responsible for responding to relationship. We can say, oh no, I'm in charge. Well, we're going to do this. No, I'm in charge. I'm pretty sure you're not. And you're doing something really dangerous right now for your own soul, and God's image and glory is being threatened. And any time I want to resist or make fun of government things or shake my fist at the way things are, I'm in a dangerous place. See, because if I don't like my government, I can use appeals. I can be humble. I can participate. I can, for the sake of the reputation of Christ, or I can move to another country. But what I can't do is stay here and make demands and grumble and complain. That's not okay. I can't do that in the government. I can't do it at work. I can't do it in my marriage. I can't do it in my church. And I can't do it as a son. That's not okay. That is not an option. If we're going to walk rightly in our understanding of God's established authority, I don't have the right to resist authority over me. I do not have that right. If I'm going to live rightly, I can find another authority. But I can't just say, I'm going to stay here and make your life a living hell. That's not okay. As related to the government, to my job, how many people do you know that work that way? Hate their work, they hate their job. Are they submitting for the Lord's sake? Are they honorably trying to make that person successful and support them? Or are they taking the paycheck, jetting? This is fundamental to those things. How many people just feel such freedom to complain about the government, complain about everything? Oh, wait a minute. I can participate. I can graciously dialogue about these things, but there is a line where I can't go. So as responsible for, if you're one of those any of those areas of being responsible for something, there's a righteous response to that of servant leadership, keeping God's kingdom in mind, faith, mission, connection, not money, power, reputation, celebrate me, seeking good, flourishing, the good and the flourishing of those under our care, or doing this earlier this morning, I couldn't think of another good word for that. But those we're responsible for. Our attitude is in the name of God. Leadership's job, government's job, employer's job is to create flourishing and an opportunity that those they are responsible for have an opportunity to grow and to live full good lives and protect them. That's the idea. And then to serve willingly. You can serve willingly. There's unrighteous response, and again, a plethora of examples of this. We seek our own gain, lord it over, authoritative, serving under compulsion, that's my job, or deferring responsibility. So that's kind of the tickling ears syndrome that the writers, scripture, kind of refer to in a number of ways. It's like, okay, so I think I should teach this, but I know that Trudy will get ticked if I do, so I won't. I won't say that because I know she'll be unhappy. Not that Trudy's ever unhappy with anything. I understand. Do it all the time. It's unrighteous. Oh, you want to hear this? Oh, you want this kind of? You want this? Oh, okay. Well, we can build that. And then you'll all be happy. That is not God's authority. That is not righteous. That is not the game God's going. So the most dangerous attitudes, okay? I think things we have to be aware of is a lack of understanding of God's delight in hierarchy as he designed it. There's so much injustice, so much crummy leadership, I understand. That does not mean you reject the plan. It means you work the plan better and in light of God's kingdom and his glory. You don't throw out the plan of God in order to obey God. One of the great dangerous attitude is staying in without getting under. It's corrosive and disruptive to kingdom patterns. And that's true in government, that's true in work, that's true in church, that's true in marriage. There is a right posture that God gets glory from as we respond to. And it's dangerous. In all of those areas, it applies. Okay, so why is this important? Well, the government, political climate, obviously, there is so much toxic grumbling, complaining, and throwing off. And frankly, there's some things that people are trying to deconstruct right now. I don't think they have any clue of the long-lasting repercussions of what we're dismantling in terms of hierarchies. And reasonably good. Plenty of humans in their flesh and their sinfulness in all kinds of offices. But I don't know if we understand. The cultural conversation where we reject anything that's been chosen for us by God, from our gender to anything, we reject his authority to do that. We get to decide that. Organizational challenges. This was what prompted the question that we were talking about. We were laying out the differences in kind of how we were going to be moving from one organization, actually just staying with the same organization, and that organization was going to be moving away from GCC. And that was the issue for me. It's the only issue for me. There's all kinds of things I would have questions about. The only issue for me was that someone asked me to defer my authority to someone else. And I can't do that. I can't do that. I can't let Trudy decide what I teach. I'm certainly willing to hear any feedback, thoughts, concerns. I'm willing to dialogue anything. But the second says, Trudy stands up and says, you have to teach this. I go, oh, I'm sorry, sister. I can't do that. So it was a very timely, I'm picking on Trudy because everybody knows she would never do that. Does that make sense? That's the issue, is who has God established as the authority? Because once you have it, I could step out of it. I mean, I'm not under compulsion, but I can't stay in that system and defer my authority. I can't. That's one of those leadership things where, no, it doesn't make any sense anymore. I grant you my authority, but I still have authority. That does not work. It never works. I can't defer my authority. I get counsel from many of you continually, my wife all the time, but I can never say, this is your fault. You made this decision. You own this. I can never say that when I'm in that responsible for. I can't do it. And I can never say when I'm in that role of responding to, I will not follow that. I will decide. I can say, I can't be under your authority, and that's kind of what we did with GCC. I can't be under that authority because you're asking me to do something that violates my conscience. So it's a matter of conscience. There is a right way to be free from that authority. But when it's preference or opinion, we are not. We just don't have that freedom. And that seems so heavy and shackling because there's, no, you're painting a picture of me. Do you understand that Jesus, God incarnate in the flesh, taking on the form of a bondservant, spoke the universe into existence, speaks nothing except that which the Father tells him to? He humbled himself to the point of death. Well, I can't humble myself. Really, your king can. And he calls you to walk in that. You can, and your king says there's a glory in it, humbling yourself that way. Not insisting on your rights, not being resistant, but meekly submitting ourselves to those in authority. There's so much at stake. The very image of God is at stake. And when the world looks at the way followers of Jesus operate in marriage, in church, in job, in government, they should sniff, whoa, you really think God's king? You really think he bound up the strong man? And it's just a matter of time before his kingdom comes. I can see that by the choices you're making, that you serve a God that you think is in charge. Do you think they can see it when we don't? And we're grabby? And grumbly? And insisting on our rights? Do you understand that's what has transformed cultures? As believers live differently in light of a different king and a different kingdom, that we get in the boat, and if the boat sinks, okay. And if the boat doesn't sink, okay. I am going with my king. And I am not going to judge. You know, I saw some red sky in the morning, Jesus. I don't know if I think I'm getting in that boat to go over to Decapolis. I'm going to reserve the right to stay here. Somebody's got to stay here. Hold down the sand. So I'm going to stay here. Let's get in the boat. Oh, okay. So that's the big deal. Local church application. There's this authority. And we're going to close with a song. You guys can come on up and start getting set up.